Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Let's play on this.
You see how the sausage is made?
That's right. Fudge is packed.
Hello, Egg Chasers. It's the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. We're here in the rugby dungeon, all in Stade Francais jerseys at the moment, which you would be able to see if you were watching on YouTube.
Which two people are. Hello to you.
Already?
Random two people, yeah. Wow. They're all gone. No. Someone is there. I just said evening, lads. Evening to you too.
They were just wondering if they needed to adjust their colour levels with the jerseys that we're wearing. That's JB, by the way.
Hello, Tim.
Wearing a pink Stade Francais jersey.
Yep.
Circa, what,
2005? When they were good.
Phil's wearing a very recent Stade Francais
jersey.
When they won
the title, after they were bad and then got good again. Jonathan Danty, vintage.
Yes. Yeah.
And I'm wearing the one with all the people on it.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's possibly my favourite one.
Do you know when James,
flowers ones.
Do you and James Haskell described this podcast as three virgins in a basement? This was what he was referring to. This exact behaviour.
Dressing up in the same tops.
Whoops.
Right, so you're going to get two podcasts in your feed. And we're going to release them... Oh, sorry. That's what's coming in a minute. We're going to release them both simultaneously.
Yeah, so you can decide what you want to listen to.
So this podcast is going to be about domestic rugby matters and all of the rugby that's been going on this weekend. Second podcast, the other podcast, which you'll find in your feed, and if you hit subscribe, you'll just get them both downloaded automatically, is going to be about the World League and other hot button issues that have been breaking in the last week.
Yes, indeed. Now, I want to revisit something which we did a few weeks ago in the quiz. Remember our quiz a few weeks ago?
Which one? Yeah, the England-Wales one?
No.
Sorry.
The one where Tim gave an answer, which might have been the most ridiculous answer in the world, which was, who did the Crusaders play on their tour? It's like the Sharks. It was like the Sharks, the Jaguars, and Tim said the Anzacs.
Oh yeah,
do you remember that?
Yeah.
Well, I've been doing some research and I found the last Anzacs game, and I brought it in for you. It was 1989.
Wow.
Here you go, mate. This is
a VHS
of the Lions Tour of Australia 1989. And what I'm proposing is that we have a little group watch of this at some point. Maybe do an extra podcast of us watching when the Anzacs last played a game.
Do you have a VHS player?
Well, no.
So my parents have a VHS player set up to a 50-inch LCD TV.
What?
Yeah, they do.
For what purpose?
Just in case.
Just to watch the 1989 British and Irish Lions tour.
Well, I genuinely think it's not been used for about 5 years, but they've always set it up on whatever TV they've got. I think just in case they ever want to go back and watch Chad. So, yeah, we could...
What were they watching? Railway Children?
Something like that. Or maybe some very early game tape of me as a young lad.
Yeah, there he goes. Running time... Over 100 minutes.
I was going to say, if it's your dad's video collection, there's a couple of websites we can introduce him to.
Includes exclusive interview with Finlay Konga. Three selected highlights from all three tests.
I love that they're going, includes an interview with... Come on. Oh, sorry. Can I just play this so I can put my phone
away?
Yeah,
you are very trigger-happy, Tim.
Okay, so I thought to start this podcast, me and Phil, you might remember a little while back, well, we all, three of us, had a bit of a giggle and a laugh at local BBC radio rugby commentary.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
because every now and again we found ourselves stuck in a car, and the only way to listen to rugby is on the wireless. And the one observation we made that local radio commentary quite often is one person trying to do the commentary, and one other person paying no attention to the person doing the commentary, just shouting. It's like they've invited a fan. Well, have a listen to the end of the game in Ashton Gate on Friday night from BBC Bristol.
But it's Gloucester secure the ball at the line-out. And Bristol driving them forward, making it very difficult. Gloucester going nowhere at the moment.
That's brilliant, lads. Keep smashing it back. Keep smashing it.
By Bristol. Oh, superb play by Bristol. But I think the ball's going to come back out. I can't see the ball. I don't think the referee...
Yes!
Partial, independent coverage.
Yeah.
I don't mind that one bit for the record. I think that's great.
Yeah, I love it. I think it's absolutely sensational.
Where's the other guy gone?
That beat Saracens last week.
That's massive.
Oh, there he is.
Hang on. Does that mean Bristol beat Saracens?
Bristol beat Gloucester?
No, but Gloucester beat Saracens.
Yeah.
Oh, that means...
So that Bristol have beat a
team. They're English champions, aren't they?
Bristol have beat a team who have beaten the English champions, twice European champions, and the team that also beat the previous English champions. So...
That's quite something.
So Bristol are now...
Dean Ryan logic.
Twice European champions, and have won the Premiership for the last 4 years?
No, because Exeter won it, didn't they?
It's not
bad.
Yeah,
they beat... Gloucester beat Exeter 2 weeks ago.
Oh, yeah, there you go. Well,
it's not bad for a team who were in the Championship.
My bad.
Yeah.
Well, there you go.
That was a great way to start the rugby weekend, that match.
It was brilliant. A brilliant spectacle if you were a neutral. If you're a Bristol fan... It would have been incredibly nerve-wracking at times, but an amazing outcome.
They're an amazing team.
So, I was tearing my hair out at times because... So, they scored a couple of great tries. The Andy Irwin try was a superb try.
Where is he from?
Is he not a local lad?
I thought he was local, but then I thought he might be Australian or something.
Andy Irwin, I don't know.
Andy Irwin. And what about the other lad?
Randall.
Harry Randall's
a local boy.
But he was at Gloucester at some point, they referred to.
Who, so, Randall?
Yeah.
So I thought Randall was very young. Am I wrong in this?
Yeah, he is. Randall's young.
Yeah, he's very young.
Eddie Jones mentioned him in a press conference recently about a future England nine.
Well, yeah, funnily enough, that's exactly where I was going to go next, which is I think he's bloody brilliant. But he's very small.
They're both very good. God, Randall's listed at 72 kg.
Yeah, that's small. I can think that's tiny, actually.
It's 10 kg lighter than me.
What's your snatch PB?
Oh, I've never
about
done snatch.
I would say
I've done like a 60 kg, but I've never practiced it.
You could snatch Harry Randall.
Yeah, make him play for Talk H. snatch him off.
That is very light.
Yeah, well, they've got good scrum half options because. Urin and Randall are playing really well. And Sturzaker, who came in from Melbourne Rebels, is a very handy player as well, and he's not getting any game time.
Mm.
So, yeah, Bristol, they scored some brilliant tries. They seem to make the game more and more interesting because every time they scored a try or a penalty, Gloucester would kick off, Bristol would receive the ball in their own 22, and they would immediately, instead of playing a nice, safe exit strategy, they'd immediately start playing out of their own 22 and inevitably fumble the ball, knock on, concede territory, or give the ball away just to pile pressure back on themselves.
Yeah, so it's sort of like my Steve Diamond theory.
everything links back to either Burgess
or Diamond,
in your case.
Yeah, so my Steve Diamond theory is, you know, not everyone can be Rob Baxter. And if we all try to be Rob Baxter, we're just going to be 5% worse than Rob Baxter. So if you're not going to do that, you may as well be Steve Diamond and be completely the opposite. And that's kind of what I think about Bristol, which is, you know, it's the Steve Diamond theory of playing rugby. Not that Steve Diamond would... endorse this theory for the record, but just do it completely differently because everyone does an exit strategy.
Yep.
So you kick off, they receive, they'll play one phase towards the touchline. You don't want to play in
they'll form a caterpillar ruck that takes 15 seconds, then do a box kick that gets maybe a territorial gain of 6 metres.
Exactly. And then that's the exit strategy, and everyone pats each other on the back, and that's great. But they're prepared for that because they've probably got either a return strategy, or they've got a strike line out, or they've got something going for them. So I have no problem with this, you know, inviting pressure on yourself, you know, and just carry on playing. If that's how you believe you can win games, that's how you should do it.
It's kind of a sort of money-balling tactics rather than players, isn't it?
Exactly. So I have another theory, right, that you should have two teams of analysts. Not one analyst, not one team of analysts, two teams.
Two teams of analysts.
Two teams.
Wouldn't be in your salary cap as well.
Correct. Exactly. Yeah, so you can spend what you like. So the first team of analysts, right, look at all the stats from the year just gone to build your strategy.
Oh, yeah.
Okay? Because that's what they do. They look at all, you know, they look at everything. And then you come to the next season with a new strategy. The problem is, everybody has done the and looked at the same stats and probably got the same strategy. So then you get your second team of analysts to analyse what the first team of analysts have done and come up with the second year's strategy to play the next year.
The ultimate end game of this is Elon Musk decides that Tesla cars aren't the future, and working out how to break the rules of rugby is then you just need someone like that.
Yeah, exactly. Me.
Someone who's going to shift the paradigm.
Exactly. Sorry, do you have anything constructive to say about this game, anyone?
I was just very... I was all round very impressed with Bristol.
Yeah.
I thought, other than making it very nervous for themselves, they played very, very well. They controlled the game against what is a very, very good Gloucester team. And a Gloucester team that have deservedly and rightfully beaten Saracens at Exeter in the last 2 weeks, and are right up there for the top four places, for playoff places. And this is a vital, vital win for Bristol.
And Gloucester, I mean, it's hard to stress actually how much I rate Gloucester this year. I think they're very good. They've got a lot of depth. I mean, their back row depth is superb. Their midfield depth is superb.
But is it Gloucester's year this year?
I don't know.
Well, how can they
win
this?
The thing? I think they can win it, you know. I do. I think they can. I think they'll get to the playoffs. And then I think they could win it, yeah.
I'm definitely confident that they're going to get to the playoffs. They're currently in fourth. They're 6 points ahead of Wasps. They will reach the playoffs.
Yeah, and
can they go away and beat Exeter or Saracens?
Well, yes is the answer.
So they have done it. They've done it once.
I don't think they'll fear either of these teams. Now, if they could get a top two place, which is very difficult, and I think
they will not get a top two place. They're 17 points off a top two place right now.
Wow.
Yeah, I would. That's probably not happening.
Yeah, it is not happening.
With seven games to go,
King's Home would be a formidable place to have a semi final if they could get it together properly. Just a few things on Gloucester, though. I think Willie Hines might be as important as Cipriani.
So it was. I think that was a big contributing factor to them losing, actually.
Because Cipriani's amazing. I might have mentioned this multiple times, but he is amazing. But Willie Hines makes the whole thing tick. And I think when, what's his name, the young lad comes
really?
On, he's just not good enough yet. He's just not quite there. Everything he seems to do, it just doesn't quite work. Like, I think he even had a pass intercepted from a scrum? I think he did, actually. He went to pass the ball from a scrum.
That must be a laboured pass.
And got intercepted by the opposition nine.
Yeah, it was a disrupted scrum, wasn't it?
Yeah, like his first pass. And I just think, like, I think he's got talent. I think he's a good player, but he's just not there yet. You know, the drop-off between Hines and him is huge.
So, yeah, on Gloucester, I think that we should jump from that game to just talking about what's going on at the bottom of the table, because that's where some of the real interesting action was this year. As you say, there's a bit of separation between the top two and the rest. There's a big blob in the middle that you can chuck a net over about seven teams. It's fantastic.
Well, yeah, fourth down to ninth.
Sale are now on the same points as Tigers.
Fourth to ninth, there's 2 points in it.
Wow.
So Wasps, 36, Northampton and Bath, 35, and Sale and Leicester, 34.
Maybe. So had Worcester won today, they could legitimately have been talking about top six.
Yeah.
They think one more win, assuming the five teams above them all didn't win, but one more win, they would have been in the top six.
Wow.
They were one win away from had they won.
You were there today, Tim.
Yeah, and I think the first thing to say about this is I can understand people feeling that ring fencing might be necessary. However, today, as we record this, I've just come from a full house at Kingston Park watching 11th versus 12th in a game that had everything on the line.
Mm.
You want ring fencing? You're going to get a empty Kingston Park, damp squib of a match, nothing to entertain you.
Well, we might be looking at the Pro 14, right? I mean, well, that'd probably be what we're looking at.
Yeah, if you're going 13th v 14th in the Pro 14, then yeah, this is what you're talking about. So there are choices and there are consequences, and you have to think very, very carefully before you just say ring fencing.
I'm a ring fencer.
It is interesting because I don't think either way is perfect. And had that have been a ring fenced equivalent game, 12th versus 11th, you might have seen more guys like Howe, the winger, more young English guys instead of the likes of Matavesi or Huhard or Bryce Heem, instead of those kind of big money players, instead of someone like Bentio, I know he didn't play, or Francois Venter, you might have seen Ollie Lawrence start in that game instead of Francois Venter. So it might have been short-term worse, but long-term potentially better.
Yeah, but then potentially better, are they really... What sort of level of game are you giving a guy like Ollie Lawrence in that? Because do they really care if they win or lose?
Well, everyone always cares if you win or lose.
A
professional sportsman, you always care.
Of course, but like realistically, there's not... Like the way that Newcastle played from minute one, it was like, oh...
It meant everything.
They recognise how important this is.
Yeah, because I think the difference is, in terms of mindset, if you're professional, I think you can switch off. I mean, you want to win the game. Everyone wants to win the game. But you can switch off and say, yeah, look, we're rebuilding this and the other.
Yeah.
When there's relegation on the line, it's a humiliation. It's a personal humiliation. I've been in relegated teams, and it's bloody dreadful.
I think Toby Flood has not had a great season, but he was smashing people. He hit, I can't remember who it was, it might have been Johnny Williams or whoever it was. He hit one of the Newcastle, that was his own teammate. Anyway, he hit one of the Worcester players so hard that that they spilt the ball. He was down on the floor and won a turnover. I've not seen Toby Flood like that. And that's Toby Flood.
Yeah, exactly. That's mild-mannered, milquetoast. Toby Flood. It's a good point. It's exactly what relegation makes people do, or the threat of it, I should say.
I could go either way.
Yeah,
on this.
Yeah.
I think there are benefits to both, and there are disadvantages of both.
Yeah.
I quite like the system you've got. The problem I don't like is the kind of boom and bust, and having your kind of teams losing a load of their stars, then having to bring in 20 stars in inverted commas to feel like they need to stay up. It's only
The way that people are spending their money. I mean, there are choices and consequences there. And I mean, for example, what we're hearing, what we understand, for example, despite the clubs being told, don't just splash your CBC money on players. From what we can tell, that's being completely ignored.
Well, they can only go to the salary cap, mind you. Maybe they won't put spin-ups to the salary cap. But what did they expect to happen, I wonder?
Long-term investment?
Yeah. Unlikely. They're going to spend it on players because that's exactly, that's what they do.
Yeah.
The whole thing about Premiership Rugby is it's somebody somewhere, it's their vanity project. And so it should be. So as soon as they get the money, they're going to spend it on players. That's what they're going to do.
So this brings Newcastle up. It was only a 4-point win, not a bonus point win. Yep. But importantly, Worcester didn't get anything out of the game.
Yep.
So it puts Newcastle still in 12th, but on 21 points. Now 5 points off Worcester, who are on 26. And they are in turn 4 points off Bristol, who are on 30.
Newcastle's 4 home games. They have 4 home games out of 7.
Wow.
Their 4 home games are winnable.
Excuse me.
That's all right. You're taking your Stad jersey off.
Yeah.
Too hot.
It's so hot.
It is warm.
You made me wear the tight one as well.
I know. I can wear the bloody tight.
I could have been nice and comfy in that.
Look at the mess I'm in.
So there was another, given how tight the table is, there was another potential basement battle. And had Leicester Tigers not scraped through by the skin of their teeth in a very close and disrupted game through injury, they would have been level on points with Bristol. They are in ninth place on 34, but only thanks to that disallowed last minute try in the Wasps game.
That's horrible to watch. I wouldn't have given it though.
Would you not have given it?
No.
Well, so given the question that was asked, it shouldn't have been given.
Yeah.
That, I think I would have liked to see JP Doyle in a different position that would have allowed him to ask a different question. And had that question have been, any reason I cannot award the try, it would have been given.
Look, there is definitely a position JP Doyle could have got into to see that ball being grounded. But that wouldn't have been the position he should be in. I think he actually...
I actually disagree.
So, okay, go on.
Because you were so close to the left-hand touchline, the position that he was in was identical to the position that the linesman was in.
So just to describe this, if you haven't seen it, I suppose, B.E. Allo, replacement prop for Wasps.
Did he play at Worcester last year?
Yeah.
Yeah, didn't he?
He's been to France and now he's back at Wasps.
Oh.
He did a pick and go, going left from a breakdown from a metre out, took the initial hit of the tackle, kept going, reached for the line, appeared to score it, but grounding wasn't visible by any camera. JP Doyle was stood immediately behind him.
JP Doyle was to the in front of him to the left-hand side.
So he was further past where he was coming from.
There was a player as Allo hit the deck. There was a Leicester player to his left-hand side. Behind the Leicester player was JP Doyle, and behind JP Doyle was the linesman, touch judge. So I think JP Doyle was direct. He had exactly the same view as the touch judge. So if JP Doyle had been further round to the right hand side, he would have given the try, or at least asked a different question. So if I was a Wasps fan, I would be very frustrated. I think as a neutral, probably that try being given and then missing the conversion and a 19-all draw, that was probably what the game deserved. If you're a Leicester fan, you'll be delighted because the number of injuries that Leicester had. And I mean, the back line, they lost two scrum halves. They had Jonah Holmes playing nine for most of the second half. And they had Will Evans out on the wing with George Worth playing outside centre. It was an absolute ragtag back line, but beautifully guided by Joe Ford.
Mm. Joe Ford played really well.
Had a man of the match performance, deserved man of the match, in a real misfit backline in the second half.
I thought him and Kyle Eastmond played very, very well, particularly at the start of the game.
So, just on that try.
Yeah.
Yes, I understand why, given the view that JP Doyle had, he couldn't give it and ask the question he asked, and there was no camera view, unfortunately, just due to the... I mean, how many times would you see not one of the cameras being able to see a grounding?
It looked like such a clip, because Willie LaRue, who is 5 yards away, jumped up in the air.
The Leicester players looked like they were acting like it hadn't been a try.
A dozen people who have seen that clearly hit the line.
And
but like, if Willie LaRue can see it, I mean, it seems very unfortunate that there's not a single camera. I mean, how many cameras do you have? Like six or something?
So, I mean...
Because they kept going to only two shots, which I was surprised at.
There must be a shot from the other end of the field.
Yeah.
4K, you can zoom in and in and in.
I don't know. I don't know. Obviously, JP Doyle, if he's seen nothing, he can't therefore say. Can he? Can he just sort of, in the weight of probability, say, that looks good, but I've not seen it? Yeah. So,
well, any reason why not to award the try?
That's the question. So it comes down to that question. And I think if he'd have asked the other question...
So could he have legitimately asked that question?
Yeah, but by the way, that should always be the question.
I think he could have legitimately asked that question.
But he's not asking the question as well. But again, this goes back to... I was a little bit confused. This is one thing I completely forgot. This is one thing I was confused. Why is JP Doyle asking the TMO? I thought we'd had a situation where the referees... are making the decision and assisted by the TMO if they want.
Yeah, well...
The TMOs are basically just a video.
If JP Doyle can't see that ball, right?
Because he could look at the big screen, JP Doyle himself, couldn't he?
He did, and they were talking it through, in fairness.
I think, given all the camera shots, given where he was, and I think for 90% of tries, that's exactly where he should be. So on the balance of probability, he should be doing exactly what he did. Just unfortunate. And even though I say it's unfortunate, I still don't know if it's been scored now. No one knows, except for the Wasps players. So he is right.
And a load of the Leicester players. Well,
yeah, so he's right.
It was a... I mean, we don't know.
I'm very confident it was scored.
It wouldn't pass in a... You couldn't convict someone of a crime on that evidence.
Thankfully. Thank God.
But, come on. A jury would go try.
Would they? Not if I'm on that damn jury.
There's not reasonable doubt, I don't know.
I would have given it. I am confident that a try was scored.
I was gutted for Wasps.
Of course, that's what Rugby League do. The great game of Rugby League. Our sister code. Reasonable doubt.
They're not just go upstairs to Steve-O.
Yeah, Steve-O.
Steve-O, did you enjoy that?
I did. No, what do they call it? It's a try. No, benefit of the doubt try. As if it should be worth 4 points. It is worth 4 points.
Points.
Yeah, 3 points. Benefit of the doubt. You get a point knocked off because you can't be sure.
Now, with all of Leicester's troubles in this game and the number of injuries I've already listed, Wasps should have won this.
Oh, yeah.
And they have a couple of things to contribute to them losing it. One, their discipline was atrocious at times. I think they had a few harsh decisions against them, but they gave away 15 penalties, not all of which were half. Some of them were just stupid, like Ashley Johnson binding, then rebinding, then taking the man at the back of a mall out and just giving him stupid penalties.
That is so... I mean, that is a real coach killer, that.
Yeah.
It's horrible.
And there's a few things that really... sorry, I know you were in your flow there.
No.
There's a few things that just bug me about the game at the minute. I understand it's just using the law and it's fine, but that whole players holding onto one player and making their way around to the back of a mall.
No, it's fine.
And then the second a ref calls mall, just collapsing it as best they can.
No, I like all that stuff because it's technical. You've got to get... If there's laws of the game, it's you for you as a coach and you as a player to get around those laws.
Well, the collapse in a mall I would get rid of because the second refs go mall and then...
Poof. Oh, but if you're a mauling player, it's tremendous. I mean, I love to set up a mall and then collapse on it. And then, you know, but the other side of that is I also love to coach the lads to work to the floor and roll and not get caught in malls. So, yeah, I don't mind many law changes, providing that, you know, you can coach around them. And also, same with the defensive mall stuff where you kind of bind, you don't change your bind and you find your way around. Well, you know, you've just got to make sure that you've got a way around that.
Yeah, I know.
It's a coaching point.
I know. It was interesting, just very briefly, it was Wayne Barnes at Kingston Park, and to really praise a referee, it was the first time I've heard a referee mention the act of just getting three players in a line and just moving the ball back before they do a box kick.
Ah.
Did he say he used it? Did he have a word with him and say, look, if I tell you to use it, was that in the...
Yes, he said at one point, I think he said it to Newcastle at one point, he said, look...
Yeah, he did, it was Newcastle.
When I call use it, if you start messing around at the back of the mall, getting more players in, that's the time you're using up. He didn't then enforce it and call a scrum when Huhard and Takalua were both doing it.
Yeah.
But at least it's on the referees' radars.
Yeah. I think they need to start enforcing that because the law is as soon as it's available at the back, the ref
should. 5 seconds.
Well, the ref calls use it and then it's 5 seconds.
Or if you're Nigel Owens, you call
Ooze.
Yeah. So all the refs need to do is just earlier call use it because that just takes away that whole thing. And the law was changed, variated, in order to stop this caterpillaring that we are seeing again and again and again that's slowing the game down.
Yeah. So you were right in the middle of saying, yeah, Wasps have themselves to blame, 100%.
Yeah. On penalties and just missing opportunities, getting in great positions and knocking on, having the ball turned over.
Now, yeah, we talked, didn't we, earlier on in the season about Wasps' injury crisis. I take it part of the injured crew would be... Anthony Watson? Marcus Watson?
Previously, yes.
Every third game, Marcus Watson's been injured. He can't stay fit.
He was dynamite.
Yeah, he was amazing.
Absolute dynamite.
That try was superb. When Jonah Holmes offers him the outside. Oh, yeah, I'll take it.
Cheers,
thank you. They've got a couple of bad injuries in their two tens, Searle and Sapwanga, and their third ten, Jimmy Gopeth.
And their fourth ten... Rob Miller.
Well, he played a little bit, yeah.
He did all right.
He didn't do too badly.
It still baffles me. It still surprises me when I say Rob Miller, ex-Premiership top try scorer.
God.
Got top try scorer in sale before Wasp paid him like a top try scorer.
Paid him like a top try scorer. Played him like a reserve.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he was a reserve as soon as he... I think he had one season as a starter, but events just caught up with him.
Did he even have that? Because he had Pierre Tau, Kirtley Beale and Willie LaRue all in his position.
Yeah, he was before Pierre Tau showed up.
I mean, devastating. That three of the best fullbacks in the world.
I mean, I wonder if he'd have made the same move now. I mean, I'm sure he would have moved himself. But I wonder if he would have moved knowing how much talent he has. I'm sure he's on England's radar at one point. In fact, he was. He went to England camp.
Yeah.
If he knew Wasps were going to throw as much money as they have the time at his position.
Yeah. I think he would have done things differently.
Let's talk about another moment in the game. I think this is worthy of conversation. A lot of people seem to think this is cut and dried, but Joe Ford scored a try, which I, under the law, I have an issue with. I have an issue with it because it's being refereed and interpreted differently game to game because the law is not clear. So Joe Ford had lovely break and capped off a nice little break and a step with a try. He did so by placing the ball down, losing the ball from his hand as he was doing so, but remaining in contact with it with the very tip of his third finger.
Yeah.
As the ball...
His ring finger.
As the ball touched the ground. Now, in rugby league, 100%, that's a try every time. Mm-hmm. Because the benefit of the doubt and all the rest of it and the laws that they have, that's what it is. Rugby union, the law for scoring a try says... What are you doing, Jay?
Nothing, just filming.
Okay. The law for scoring a try says...
Voyeur.
Glad to see your focus. says that you have to be holding the ball with your hand or hands or your arm or your arms. Now, that's a movable feast. And I'm sorry, Joe Ford was not holding the ball.
He definitely was not holding the ball.
So... I'm okay with it being called a try if every time it's called a try. However, this is one simple way that the law could just be made black and white more so because he's not holding the ball. And the law says you must be holding the ball.
So I'm looking at standard laws 21, in goal, ground in the ball. And it's the ball can be grounded in goal by holding it and touching the ground with it.
Yep.
Or by pressing down with it.
If that's the first one you said is if you're carrying the ball. The second one you said is if the ball is loose.
Well, so it doesn't.
Well, that no, but
it
that
doesn't
is it.
See. Yeah, but it doesn't seem to differentiate. So these are the words.
Okay.
It doesn't, as far as I can tell. But this is so. This it's interesting because that's 21 in goal ground in the ball. If you go to law 8 scoring.
Sorry.
A try.
So, are you getting these confused, Tim?
No.
Joe Ford did score.
He did.
Yes, that's what I'm saying.
Joe Ford. It was allowed.
Yeah. He was given the try. Yeah.
Oh, Oluwafela.
Was it last week or the week before? I can't remember.
I'm sure it was a few weeks ago.
A few weeks back, Oluwafela had a try which was disallowed, and it was exactly like Joe Ford's, which is my point. As long as they're all done the same way, I'm fine. Ben, yeah. Joe, sorry, yes. Go on.
Yeah, so 8.2A. A try scored when an attacking player is first to ground the ball in an opponent's in goal, and then you jump to 21-1A by holding it and touching the ground with it, or by pressing down on it with a hand or hand, arm or arms, or the front of a player's body from waist to neck.
So what you just said is either by one holding it. So basically, the point one is if you're the ball carrier. The second one is if the ball is loose.
So I'm not sure. So yes, it's in
that is what it is. That
might be an interpretation. That's not. It's not specific to say that. I think that's a logical interpretation, but it doesn't specifically say that.
Well, it says either by holding it or by touching it down.
By pressing down on it with hand or hands.
Yeah.
But Joe Ford, so I guess the difference in this will come, and virtually every time on the second one, 21.1B, virtually every time that would occur, the ball would have to be on the ground.
Yeah.
In this scenario, we've got, he was holding it. He has not knocked it on is a key bit in this. Because had he have lost control, had he have, had it not been touching his hand at all times, it would have been a knock-on. Because if there's separation and then the ball hits the floor, unless it goes backwards, which it didn't, it would be a knock-on, in which case none of them count. Right. And this is a kind of... It's a very unusual example of 21.1B. But I still think it falls under 21.1B.
Where he's remained in contact...
Even though he's not holding
with,
it.
Even though it's with the very tip of his finger. So, I mean, it could be made simpler because at the point I made, Jordan Olofella a few weeks ago, try was disallowed.
Yeah, and wrongfully disallowed, I think, probably.
In those metrics, it's wrongfully disallowed.
Isn't it? That's it.
Really, people hate.
And it's not hard to sort that out, is it? I mean, there's a lot of areas which are very, how long's a piece of string, loads of grey areas. This is pretty simple to sort out.
It should be.
The only other example of something like this I could think of is the NFL catch rule. Which is so pedantic. Like, you have to catch the ball. I can't remember the wording, but it's something like, and then control the ball throughout the entire process of the catch. So if you catch
until you're grounded.
No, and you've sort of got to stand up. Like, this ball could not be moving. It can't dislodge itself. You've got to catch it, go to ground. And if anything happens to that ball, even remotely, it's like, nope, not a catch. And you've got to go through it frame by frame by frame. So whereas I do like the consistency, the idea that you have a rule which can be enforced, but you have to go to TMO for that sort of scrutiny, I don't know.
And I think the problem you've got is to have any concise set of words to capture every single potential thing. Because the Olofella and the Joe Ford, the Olofella more... They are unusual scenarios, they're very difficult to articulate in a concise sentence or two. Yes, this constitutes a try.
Well, you could simply say you have to be holding it or have maintained some contact with the ball until it's in contact with
and
the ground.
That's probably the bit that's missing.
That covers Olofella. It covers Joe Ford. Yeah. It means we're not talking about it, and it means in the World Cup final. There's no issue that a team's going to get knocked out because one referee interprets it one way and one interprets it another way.
Maybe you're right. Maybe if you don't continue to hold it the whole time, you must at least remain in contact with it with a part of your body that can score the try.
Yeah.
And I think that probably does clear it up. You're right.
And there you go. We solve one problem for World Rugby. Listen to our other podcast and we'll solve some more problems for World Rugby.
Trailblazing.
Who seem like they need some help at the minute. Anyway. Yes. Sorry, that was a bit of a little geeky detour, but...
No, it's quite good to understand that, the differences in grounding.
Sale Sharks played rugby this weekend.
They did.
They lost.
But did we all predict a Sale win?
Steve Parrott did get in touch with us on Twitter and said...
Thanks, Steve.
Whatever, Steve.
We asked for some questions, and he said, what were your predictions for Sale v Exeter?
Tell you what, there was... It's a tricky game. I mean, Exeter won because they were a better team and they did the basics well. Sale had, I mean, they were a world-class try by a world-class scrum half, Will Cliff. it was absolutely brilliant.
Great break by friend of the pod.
Yeah, I mean,
Byron.
Yes. I mean, well, the break, was it the break from Byron or was it from...
Byron through the middle.
It was the assist definitely from Byron.
Yeah.
I think that might have been the nicest try of the weekend. Absolutely wonderful. But some of the other things that they were doing were just bizarre.
I think we've missed one key thing from...
About Byron McGuigan?
No, before we depart.
Will Cliff?
The Wasps-Leicester game.
Oh, sorry.
Jack Willis. He's
back. Yeah. It's good, isn't it?
Looking really good for a guy that's just back.
You look very good.
Mind you, when do rugby players get time to be fully fit, fully conditioned... Do all their weights properly. And not often.
Yeah.
You know, it's no one. Didn't Lawrence Lydell come back like 20% stronger or something? Now, no further questions asked. But, you know, you do get time to really work on, you know, things you don't get to work on.
That's why I was injured so much.
Exactly.
I spent all that time in the gym.
Has Jack Willis's hairline gone even further down his forehead? He's very Stephen Gerrard, isn't it? Stephen Gerrard and Jack Willis have got the same hairline.
Or Mike Williams.
Mike Williams is a good one.
Yeah. Right. So... Is there any chance, this is one question we've been asked a few times, what do you think the chances of Jack Willis as a World Cup bolter?
Huge. Huge. He's a great player.
Potential. It's an interesting question.
It's chance for a World Cup bolter.
Well, World Cup spot, I think, is the...
World Cup spot, then.
Well, that's a different question. less so than a World Cup bolter. I think he's got a good chance of being considered a World Cup bolter. I think he's got less of a chance of being a World Cup spot. But and he can definitely do it.
It's a difficult position, so he's not got a lot of time.
No.
He's got 7 games plus any in Europe, which Wasps don't have.
I think if he was a legitimate number 8 option, I think if
that's what I was going to say.
A legitimate number 8 option presents themselves, they've got a shout, which is why the uni rig, Alex Dombrandt, we can come on to him in a bit.
Well, is Jack Clifford fit?
Playing in and out.
Because I tell you what, that's
not playing great.
That would be my guess who gets the bolter spot. I know Eddie Jones likes him. I know he gives him flexibility across the back three.
Yeah, Eddie Jones does like him. Clifford, for me,
I was going to say, the guys that have been in the England squad, Vunipola and Hughes at 8, Curry, Underhill, 7, Wilson, 6.
6/8.
6/8. You've got Shields, Robshaw, Bench Curry, Jack Clifford, and all of those have been involved before Jack Willis, who was he was going to tour South Africa, though.
Yeah, he was named in the summer squad.
And then he did his knee. Was it against Sale, actually?
No, it was against Saracens in the semi-final.
You're right, yeah.
And so, yeah.
Mike Rhodes, did you mention?
Michael Rhodes has been involved.
He has been
well.
Involved in at least one squad. And, I like Michael and Ted
Rhodes
Hill
a lot.
And Ted Hill got a cap.
Yeah,
Ted Hill's good. He's really good.
Yeah, but anyway.
I mean, there's so many good young...
He will be good.
I think he is good. I think he's good now. I think he's one of Worcester's better players.
I'm definitely one of Worcester's better players.
I think he's one of the better players in one of the bottom two teams in the country.
I'm agree again.
is he one of England's best players?
I don't know.
No.
Not yet. Here's a question for you to mull over. What would New Zealand do in this situation? Because they have a similar... Well, they have lots of these situations where they just have more talent than they can shake a stick at. So look at their fly-half situation. They had Sopoanga, they had Barrett, they had...
Cruden. Slade, if you go further back.
Yeah, there was another one that I'm missing. I can't remember at the moment. But anyway, there's lots of them. That's my point. And those are only the guys that got caps. There is an element of what New Zealand does. Yeah, well, you can have a cap. But they decide early on who is going to be the guy, regardless, and then discard everyone else. And I wonder if England needs to do that and say, is it going to be Willis? Is it going to be Underhill? Is it going to be Kerry Wright? Everyone else can go to France.
Well, here's another linked question. Rob Shaw's chances of getting back in, since we're on the Willis tip, you've basically got a guy in Willis who is huge potential in the future. You've got a guy like Rob Shaw who's got a huge amount of experience in the past. They're both fine players right now.
Do I want a man, right? Okay, so here's the question. Do I want a man, okay, who is I'd rate him as, say, an A. Not an A+, but an A. A good player, a good man, a good leader. Do I want him coming in to play a World Cup with all of the mental fragility, skeletons in the closet, and ghosts that he has about the last World Cup? No, I don't. I mean, I can just see, as much as I respect the guy, I can just see it not working out too well for him. Get someone with a fresh face in there who, you know, sort of like Matt Tate in the final where he scored. He didn't score, but, you know, just not try. That kind of guy. I'd rather go with him than Rob Shaw.
I've noticed quite a lot of this, a lot of it on Twitter, actually.
Which is
been hanging out in the cesspit. I've noticed quite a bit of... There's a lot of football-esque chat going on in the world of rugby at the minute.
Is there?
Yeah, well, for one thing,
I only hang around with nice people on Twitter, so I didn't see this.
I've already sold.
I've seen your Twitter, JV.
Yeah,
I've already solved one issue with Cocker's Law, which is you can't just say every time someone has a good game they should be in the England squad unless you're willing to say the player you drop.
Do you know what Logan's Law is? This is a legitimate thing.
What's that?
Logan's Law is something which we have on our group. Logan's Law is, basically, people are stupid. So when someone does something wrong, it's like, yep, that is Logan's Law. What's that?
Yeah, the demonstration of Logan's Law.
Yep, stupid. People are stupid.
It's a good law. So I've already sorted that one out, and I can't remember what I was going to... Oh, yeah, there's a lot of people... you see it in football all the time. There's this... Just because someone's young, someone young has a good game means their game somehow perception-wise, was better than a slightly older player having a good game.
Yes,
do you understand what I mean?
Absolutely, yes.
It's almost like an equation. It's like you can have two players that play the same quality. If one's a young guy, that performance was incredible.
So, Tim, you've done something here. Okay, you've misunderstood the human condition. When you see an older player play, you look at the player he is. When you see a young player play, you look at the player he could be.
Well, I understand that, but we've got a World Cup in September, not in September 2023.
What could he be by September?
There is also to that rule. There's something funny that goes up on at the top end as well. So, like Scalp Brits at 37, who had a great game.
Yeah.
For the Bulls,
yeah, you're right.
People rave about that. If he was a kind of 28-year-old player, no one would really care. If he was a 21-year-old player, people would go crazy over him.
Yeah.
And at 37, people would go crazy over him. And
well, Simon Shaw, a third test of the Lions.
Yes, you're right.
One of the great performances.
And there's something else, which is not exactly the same, but similar, where, say, Owen Farrell's pass in Dublin kind of was like, I don't really like Owen Farrell, so I'm not going to make a big deal of that. Had Beauden Barrett done that pass?
Danny Cipriani done that
player.
Pass.
Yeah. Had Sippers done that pass?
Sippers would have been the most. Finn Russell, it would have been incredible.
Yeah.
That for me is one of the all-time best passes.
What, the Farrell one?
That Farrell one.
Get a grip. No
that,
way.
That is
No. The best.
It's one of the all-time best.
One of the. I don't think it makes the top 10. I've not got a top 10 to mind. But it's so far below the Finn Russell pass.
The fact that it is, the one key difference from the Finn Russell was, two key differences here. So, number one, it was inches away from Keith Earls. It was millimetres. You look at the Finn Russell pass to Hugh Jones, not an England player, in 10 yards. Number two, the Finn Russell to the Hugh Jones, that is a phenomenal pass as well. One of the all-time greats.
It is the all-time great, so I'm going to go with.
That has a 3-4 second hang time.
Something like that.
You've got a lot of time for Hugh Jones to adjust his line slightly, slow down, speed up, move in, move out.
But he hits him at full tilt.
The Owen, but you've got time to judge just where it's going to land. The Owen Farrell pass was a second, less than a second, because it was 10, 15 yards, absolute bullet pass within an inch of Keith Earls.
I would say the Finn Russell pass is better than the Manning pass to hit Knicks in the Super Bowl. That's how good that pass was. Because he led him to where he wanted to be. Like, Hugh Jones...
Is the Knicks one the one on the helmet?
No, is the... I want to say, it's not Burris, that's Plesko. No, no, not him. Who was that guy?
Oh, I can't, it doesn't matter anyway. Yeah. I know the one you...
I'm sure it's Hakeem Nicks, the guy with extra large hands. And he catches it just kind of right on the sideline. One-handed, incredible pass and incredible catch.
So back to Chris Robshaw.
Yeah, I was going to say. So in summary, just because someone's young, don't overlook Chris Robshaw. The guy is amazing. Has been playing brilliant.
He's playing well. He's only been back for a few games. And I would have Robshaw over Clifford. I'd have Robshaw over Shields.
Yep.
Yes,
definitely.
Agreed.
I'd have Mark Wilson as my number one choice six right now, though.
100%.
Yeah,
I agree with all that. Just on Robshaw, this is how I think about it. Who is he likely to be playing against? So, you know, who is the best six in the world at the moment?
Who have we got? Omani's a contender.
Yeah, Omani's very good, actually. Pocock or Hooper?
Pocock or Hooper, yeah.
If one of them plays six.
New Zealand will be interesting because it'll be Shannon Frizzell or...
Khaleesi will be South Africa's
six. Khaleesi, yeah.
So I think, like, would you trust Robshaw to best any of them?
Veya Fafita.
Or even be competitive, and I'm not...
He's very different to a lot of them.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
What I like about Robshaw is he's very much like Wilson. He just
works.
He's got a huge engine and just
I don't know,
works.
Yeah, but do you know what his problem is?
What?
Not northern enough, he doesn't have that grit. And Mark Wilson has that in spades.
He does something Robshaw does have much better than Wilson is his offloading, distributing game.
Who cares? He's a six.
You could always
win a fight.
His link play.
And also, if you have all the players in the squad, if Wilson gets injured, you could just put Underhill to six still.
Link play is very important.
Link
maybe.
Play is not that important.
Link play is very important.
Win your rooks, beat people up, threaten people, you know, win those. Like Omani. Do you ever see Omani running around trying to, you know, link play? He's there to do, you know, intimidate people, rough them up.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedy-ad-free. That's amazon.com/comedy-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Bit.
Well, do you know what? Just briefly, as we were hanging out in the Twitter cesspit, did you notice one little conversation between a couple of prominent rugby characters? In fact, there's a couple of these. First one.
Ooh.
Ross Harris. Ross Harris, nice guy. Was just letting people know where
Innocuous tweet.
Completely innocuous tweet. He was working on the Pro 14 and just said, "Hey guys, if you want to come watch the Pro 14 games," and he mentioned a couple of Welsh regions that were playing, "it's on." To which, I don't know whether he'd had a couple to drink, but...
We've all been tweeting after a couple.
Jiffy.
Go on.
Jiffy replied with, "No one's watching FFS. Stop the BS." And
I don't understand this. There must be something else going on. I mean, this is why everyone hates Welsh rugby, isn't it? Including even some Welsh people. Because the politics behind it. You know, I have no idea what that relates to, but it's obviously deeply personal and matters deeply to someone in Wales. And probably a handful of them, and they all hate each other for it. So I don't know. And more to the point, I don't care.
Well, yeah, it is interesting that even a very, very prominent Welshman is absolutely hammering the domestic Welsh league, the domestic Welsh matches.
Did you see a tweet that I put out the other week? here we are. I'm actually bounced.
Was it about Jeremy Corbyn?
No, it wasn't. It was about it's about how much I love the old early 2000s comedy Father Ted, and how similar BBC Welsh coverage is. Like they've got was it the Welsh language coverage? It is Father Ted-esque. It's identical.
It seemed to me like he was having a pop at Ross Harris. Like, why are you telling people that game's on? Nobody's watching. Stop the BS. It's like, well, hold on. Everybody's got to earn a living.
I'm pretty sure there's more to this. And the reason I say that is
Do you think he was overlooked for a gig with him?
I don't know.
With Premier Sports.
But I do know that he's mentioned the viewing figures before, and I don't know why. And that's why I say I think there's more to it, and that there's obviously something bubbling under the surface of Welsh rugby. Well, there's lots of things bubbling under the surface of Welsh rugby.
But, hold on. So you're suggesting that Jonathan Davis is concerned about Welsh rugby here and not about himself?
No, that's what I mean. There is something else going on in there, and I don't know what it is. Like, he's not happy about Premier Sport doing something, or, you know, there is something else. This is part of a bigger feud, and I can't tell you exactly what it is. Definitely.
But I thought it was a bit harsh anyway.
Yeah, it's
everyone's got to earn a living, and everyone... Yeah.
Well, talking of Twitter feuds, I saw my friend Stephen Jones was at the Sale game.
Oh, yeah, did you have a chat with him?
I didn't. We locked eyes, I waved at him, but I had to play for Sock H, so I literally went in, interviewed Chris Ashton, and then...
Ran away.
Ran away like a coward.
Tail between your legs.
Yeah. Where are you going? I'm running from Steve Jones.
He wrote up a very favourable report about Sale.
Egg chasers?
Not about egg chasers, not about JB, not about the rugby dungeon, about Sale.
Oh, good.
In the rugby paper. In the Times, sorry. Rugby paper.
Mm. Excellent. The second Twitter feud? You got two of them?
Well...
You're conflicted here, aren't you?
Well, no, I'm not conflicted. It was actually done. No, do you know what, actually, to be fair... This was not the Twitter cesspit. This was two people on Twitter actually having different opinions,
acknowledging
acknowledging each other's opinions and politely disagreeing. And this, there should be more of this. Ooh. And that was Andy Good, Nugo Monier talking about Carl Sinclair. Andy Good sort of let rip at Carl Sinclair a little bit in the wake of the Wales game, saying that...
He
wrote an article, right? And I actually don't think the editor of the article did Goody much of a favour with the headline. But the article was fine.
Yeah, the article was fine. That quite often the people writing stories... Well, no, it's usually not the person writing the story writing the headline. which, the headline was a bit of a... It made it appear like a hatchet job on Carl Sinclair, but... Mm. Anyway, they disagreed, and that was nice. Good. More of that, please.
Excellent. Well, then.
Right. Oh, so are we going to mention WRU and the region stuff here? Or,
no,
or
we'll do it in the next podcast.
The next pod. Right,
fine.
So hang on. We have missed some games.
We have. We missed Bath Quins.
Missed Bath Quins.
Saracens Northampton. Yep. Saracen pressing the reset button again.
Yep. Death,
taxes, and Saracens getting over losing a game by absolutely walloping Northampton Saints.
Yes. Yeah,
but Lewis Ludlam scored a good try and on his debut as captain, which is nice.
Yeah, another good young back row.
Yeah, seven. And he's playing really, really well.
He is.
They had a bit of a nightmare, Northampton, because their third choice 10, or whatever he may be, pulled out last minute, which meant one of the centres had to go to 10, which means that the fullback had to go to 13. Oh.
No, the fullback went to 10. Furbank went to 10.
That's right, yeah.
RC Tuala, who is a fullback,
came off the wing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they had all sorts of issues. But, yeah, it feels and like, even though they'd lost, sort of good things are happening there.
This is an interesting one because I think Northampton, there are some positives. Lewis Ludlam is a good player, but they won't take too many positives out of this. So it's 36-17. It was 6 tries to 2. Saracens missed 4 out of 6 conversions, which didn't help the scoreline.
I was going to say,
if that was Wasps, you'd have been absolutely ripping into Wasps.
Different, it's completely different.
You would have. Yeah. You would have been.
Also,
you wouldn't have been saying, oh, well, you know, they're doing some good things. You'd have been like, they conceded six tries. It was a pathetic performance.
So I said at the start of the season when Wasps were bad, I actually prefer the Wasps team being bad when they've got their own kids in there.
Guys from the Championship.
Yeah, guys from the Championship. Guys that they're giving a chance to. When I didn't like Wasps is when they just spend lots of money and still lose. You know, at least Northampton are giving lots of lads an opportunity, and some will swim, some will sink. And you know, the champions winning again at home—that's not a big story.
Yeah, the story is probably that Northampton actually won the second half.
Did they?
It was 5 tries to 0 in the first half. Not a good first half for Northampton.
No, it's not.
It was 2 tries to 1 in the second half.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a few other questions and stuff we've been asked, so I could just rattle through a couple of these.
Yeah. Go for it. Hang on. Can we talk about Benetton, please?
Your beloved Benetton.
Benetton beat Edinburgh.
And
Edinburgh, yeah.
And your beloved Ulster.
Bonus point away win against Dragons. bonus point.
Ah, right.
They just snuck in the fourth try. Only just got a bonus point away win in terrible conditions at Dragons.
Yeah. So
it is very tight at near the top of Pro 14 Conference B. So
I'm pretty sure that Treviso, or Benetton, whichever one you want to call them, I think they're definitely going to make the playoffs. I think they are definitely going to make the playoffs, which would be astounding. It would be an astounding achievement.
So it is tight there. So Leinster, with 4 games to go, have already guaranteed a home semi-final. They are 22 points clear at the top.
Yeah.
But then Benetton are on 50. Ulster on 49, Scarlets, winners a couple of years ago, 45, and Edinburgh on 42.
So we drew.
We.
Yeah. Against
put on
Ulster.
Your Benetton shirt.
We beat Scarlets, we've beaten Edinburgh. In fact, we've beaten everyone except for Leinster.
So it's top three, right?
Top three of both pools.
Yeah.
It's going to happen. I'm going to single-handedly turn this Benetton.
So, if they finish top three, who will they have finished above in their pool?
Sorry, I just need to point this out. Leinster, 22 points ahead, okay? Benetton's point difference, their second, plus 53, respectable. Leinster's points difference?
Plus
250.
Higher or lower?
It's higher. Oh, do you know it?
I do know it. I know it's higher.
320 plus 320.
It's because you've got three teams in the two conferences. Zebre minus 304, Southern Kings minus 264, and Dragons minus 220.
Tell me, I just want to judge that. I'm not denying it will be a great achievement if they get the if they qualify for the playoffs. But I just want to qualify that it will be a phenomenal achievement. Who will they be above if they do manage that?
Certainly, two of Ulster, Scarlets, and Edinburgh. They'll be ahead of two of those three, and they are, genuine teams.
Genuine quality teams.
And two of Southern Kings and Dragons.
So they'll be above two good teams.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And above two.
It's not guaranteed for Benetton yet, but that win given them a real boost because it was a 6-pointer because they've now created an 8-point gap away from Edinburgh.
Yeah, so my view on this is Conor O'Shea is coming in for a lot of stick for Italy, but it's a big old oil tanker to turn around.
Absolutely.
And this might be the green shoots that they're looking for. Now, I don't know if they're connected, and I am reluctant to say, well done, Conor O'Shea, because he's lost a lot of games. And also...
Do you know who the head coach is at Benetton?
Well, I was going to say, he is appointed by Conor O'Shea. I can't remember the guy's name now.
Because he should probably get a fair bit of credit.
That's exactly what I'm saying. So before we go, well done, Conor O'Shea. I would don't want to do that because obviously it'd be a little bit harsh on the coaches and the players that are actually having to go out and do this.
But by all accounts, it's inextricably linked.
Yeah. It's just great work.
And we will definitely be mentioning Italy and the fact that they are ranked 15th.
In
the world.
Oh, and
in our other podcast.
But hang on, can we mention this as well? And I think this has been overlooked massively. Treviso looked pretty sold out. But more importantly, it's a good place to go for a few Negronis.
Just up the road from Vienna. I don't know if we'd get away with... Venice. I don't know if we'd get away with going to Venice and not with wives in tow. It's a dangerous one, that.
Well, we wouldn't need to tell them.
We're going to
record the pod. Just going to watch
Going to Treviso.
A domestic Treviso, aren't we?
Just say Treviso. Don't say Venice. Just
tell them we're going to watch a domestic game of rugby somewhere in Europe.
I missed a flight once because I got on the wrong train in Italy from Verona. And we were meant to go the opposite way and end up in Venice. And it was not until we got to Venice CF that I realised, oh my God, I made a horrible mistake. Missed my flight and it cost me God knows how much in tickets to get back. And then more in tickets to get the next... Fly B-plane. Horrific.
Oof.
Well, you made up for it by you waking up, fortunately, in Rome 50 minutes before our flight left.
Home Alone 2. It's happened again.
25 miles away from the airport and making it. Right, so another question that's come in relating to Joe Simpson's kick to the head of... Sam Harrison.
Oh, yeah, that was an interesting one.
In the Wasps v Leicester game, and it's more a technical point. So the ball was loose. Sam Harrison was diving on the ball. Joe Simpson was looking to fly hack it, kicked him in the head. The tweet that came in said, I believe it was an accident, as JP Doyle ruled.
Yep. It's still reckless, though.
The commentators praised JP Doyle on the application of common sense, but that shouldn't matter. Intent has no place in rulings.
That is correct.
In terms of contact with the head.
Our very astute listener knows his onions, and he is correct.
That may well be true, but I don't want to see that yellow carded or even penalised.
And I agree with that, but I also agree with the listener, which is it was reckless, and by letter of the law, he should go. And maybe if we're asking for consistency in grounding rules, we need consistency in kicking in the head rules.
It's interesting because JP Doyle actually used the word reckless.
Did he?
But he said it wasn't reckless. He said there's no intent and it wasn't reckless.
If he kicks one in the head, it's reckless.
He was saying the ball was the ball was free, and so he's legitimately allowed to try and kick it. It just so happens that at the exact moment he would have made contact with the ball, Sam Harrison had dived onto the ball.
Now, the thing about this is, Sam Harrison got contact to the head. Was he concussed? Did he fail an HIA?
Yes.
Or it wasn't one of those situations where you override the HIA and say he got contact with the head, get him off?
Well,
no, I think he failed the HIA.
Did he?
He certainly didn't come back on.
No, he didn't come back on.
I know that much.
I just want to say, well done, JP Doyle. And I know it may well be contrary to the, quote, letter of the law, but this is what it's about, because that is a rugby incident. Let the boys play.
So I am actually okay with that being a rugby incident. Fine. I think it is very different to... a high shot where you don't use your arms, you go in and the player ducks last second, you hit them in the head. That is a different... To me, it looks like a different kind of reckless this.
If
I know it may sound a bit stupid, but I'm okay with that being a rugby incident.
If the guy is tackling another guy and he falls awkwardly and he gets hit in the head by the flick of a heel and someone's running forward, that is a complete accident. That is a rugby incident. Nothing can happen. He's going to fly hack a ball and you can see that there's a player nearby.
Oh, no, he can't. He's fly hacking a ball that's in midair.
Yeah, but you can still see what's in front of you.
I mean,
otherwise,
come on.
Where's he going to aim the ball to?
Come on.
You
don't actually mean what you're saying.
No, I'm happy how it panned out, but I'm saying if you want to avoid like the conversation we had at the start of the pod, which about consistency and inconsistency, there needs to be a certain amount of consistency. And there'll be an incident like this in the future where the guy does get a red card. And I'm just saying that is where you're inconsistency comes from.
There's been incidents in the past where guys have had red cards, like when George North headbutted Nathan Hughes' shin.
One of the less good incidents in rugby.
Yes, but you're not going. The point is, you're not going to change any behaviour by sending off Nathan Hughes or by sending off Joe Simpson. Sometimes in a rough game like rugby, accidents happen, but that's okay.
I hate to say this,
and that's okay.
I hate to say this. I thought the same about the high challenge in the air, but actually that has changed behaviour.
Yeah, that is far more common than this.
Yes.
There are two I can think of in the last 3 years.
But it has changed behaviour, though. You agree with that?
Yeah, but that is something that happens 5 times a game, not twice in 3 years.
Yep. No, I'm fine with it. I'm fine with it. And if that's the standard which is going to be dished up from now on, I'm fine with that too.
A bit of lower league news as well. Tony Greenaway tweeted us at Rugby Podcast and said he was watching a game on Saturday in National 2 North where a player was sin binned for swearing at a touch judge. But the touch judge had just previously sworn at that player.
Nice.
That is inconsistent.
Yeah. That is inconsistent.
There are more yellow cards for both of them.
Allegedly.
Yeah.
They say there's more than one scandal in lower league rugby this week. If you want to talk about that.
Yeah.
Does it involve Talk H?
No, it involves another club which you're involved in.
Oh, yeah. Very disappointing news coming out of London Scottish who've... He's decided to replace their extremely promising young coach next
talented
season,
who's
done a really good job at taking them from 11th to mid-table, nowhere near relegation.
To be fair, I wouldn't say the quality of coaching there is as good as, say, Jersey. I mean, Jersey must be the gold standard for rugby played and how they coach and how they play. Wouldn't you agree?
Well, actually, the head coach at London Scottish was the guy that
masterminded.
Was the guy that brought through the guy that's gone on to become spotted, identified, and developed, the guy that's now the attack coach at Jersey.
And
a very promising coach.
He also masterminded.
And masterminded the only victory of any championship side, London Irish included, in Jersey in the last year. But no, London Scottish, in their wisdom, are going for a guy that's...
They will look back at this decision in the same way that Bath looked back at their Gary Gold decision. It will not age well.
No, it will not age well. So I'm sure Nick Rouse, no doubt, is going to have a promising future at his next club.
Exactly right.
He's already got two good jobs under his belt. What else? Is there anything?
So we didn't mention, or we've not yet mentioned, the Bath-Harlequins game, which was Bath snatching defeat from the jaws of victory.
Is this
again
for like the third time in 4 matches they've done this?
They certainly did this against Northampton a couple of weeks ago.
I think the end of the season can't come quick enough for Bath.
Yes.
They just want to be done with it.
Yeah.
That's for Harlequins. I mean, I'm not ready to say that they're a legitimately good team yet, because I have a feeling they'll embarrass me if I do. But I feel that they might be.
They're playing some good rugby.
They're just as good as the sum of their parts, they should be bloody fantastic.
They've got a good, well-balanced team at the moment.
The biggest difference you could argue with Quins this year is, and this definitely links to the other podcast that will be in the feed about international versus club rugby and pulling and pushing in different directions. A four-player swing from England to club rugby makes a massive difference.
I think it's something else, you know. So I was thinking...
That is big.
Bears in the changing room?
Yeah,
something like that. Which is, I thought these guys were genuine contenders for relegation. I thought they would be struggling.
A lot of people were saying that after about six weeks even. They were not looking good early doors.
Well, one of the reasons for this is I just simply didn't think they liked each other. I don't think they wanted to play for each other. I thought there's lots of like different fractions in Harlequins. And they somehow seem to have healed. Whether they've healed around, you know, the bear iconography, which they leave in the change rooms, I don't know. But they seem to like each other again, and that's really important. You know, if you're a team, you're gonna have to get on. So I think it's probably more to do with that, because the talent's there, that's for sure.
talent's definitely there. Both the experienced England guys and some of the young guys coming through. Definitely there. I think Gustard just having a fresh face rather than kind of repeating the same old coaches from one internal post to another internal post to a playing post to Nick Evans, Nick Easter, to a coaching post. I think that just having the fresh face around seems to have done very good. Don't know too much about the insides and outs. But Harlequins are on a really good run of form.
They seem to be also engaging in some kind of genetic experiment for England's rugby future, because the uni-rig Alex Dombrandt, who... what a breakout season. Who saw that coming? And I'm gutted that Phil managed to pick him up on fantasy rugby draft.
Especially because he's listed as a lock.
What a pickup.
Is he?
Yes.
Oh.
Such, that's like, he's probably smart. He's probably MVP in fantasy rugby.
He's not far off recently, especially considering the differential from him to your average lock is phenomenal.
So you've got Alex Dombrandt, his girlfriend is like a very, very high performing netballer.
Yeah, in the Football Super League.
Let's please.
Which team does she play for?
Surrey,
whatever it is.
Sorry.
We should like publicly fund their children, because that's an investment.
A eugenics program, Tim.
Get it
is
done.
This is a very dark place.
Get it done.
I don't know the history
get
of the subject.
Get it done. Yeah. I'm not advocating anything legal. Well, let's make it consensual, but let's get that done.
So who are the netball? Who are the netball Super League team in Manchester? Is it Northern
Thunder? Storm?
Northern Thunder.
Manchester Storm
is ice hockey.
It's Phil Neville's sister. It is. Tracy Neville.
Yes, T-Nev.
T-Nev.
And she does England too.
T-Nev.
Surrey Storm, Manchester Thunder.
Manchester Thunder, yeah. Oh, it used to be Northern Thunder.
Loughborough Lightning. Wasps have got a team, haven't they?
Yeah, Wasps Netball, creatively titled.
I quite like that. I quite like multi-sport clubs.
I think
Saracens Mavericks.
There's a good little sync up between rugby and netball. It would be good. Yeah. Like every Premiership rugby club could have a netball team. You'd sort of run the two parallel.
They do a lot of these sports in Spain, don't they? Like Real Madrid have a football team.
Yeah, and a basketball team.
And a rugby team.
What?
And so do Barcelona, yeah.
Oh, by the way, Spain
beat Romania.
Beat Romania in the rematch.
Have that. Have that, you cheating scumbags. You know what you did. You know what you did. Yeah, delighted with that. Absolutely delighted. And justice.
And we haven't had our Tier 2 tour, but that hasn't stopped a lot of Egg Chasers listeners having stag do's and various trips.
Because it's the best tournament to go and watch.
To Belgium, to Madrid. We've had loads of people getting in touch. So we've started something and it's great.
Someone sent me a picture of that stadium and I've been there twice now.
Mm.
Once just for a coffee with Phil to meet the Spanish referees who met by accident. Yeah. Bored them to tears. And other time to watch the game. Right? And I can honestly say, it is one of the best stadiums that I've been to watch rugby. It's old school.
Brilliant.
It's just an amazing stadium.
Yeah.
I love it there. In fact, that's my number one choice to go of where to go to watch rugby during the Six Nations, including the Six Nations venues.
So I've actually stumbled onto a Tier 1 tour next weekend. I've been offered tickets to go up to Edinburgh to go and watch Scotland-Wales.
Nice.
And I've stumbled across tickets to go to... Scotland, sorry, Wales Island.
Nice. The decider.
What day is that one?
A Saturday. Saturday.
That's the Super Saturday in 2 weeks'
Super
time.
Saturday. And you're going this weekend?
Coming weekend.
That's the Sunday match.
No, the Saturday as well.
So are you playing Vets Rugby Friday night, though?
That's the plan.
Oh, nice.
So play Vets Rugby Friday night, then on Saturday morning get on a train to Edinburgh.
Yeah, so we've got some big hitters playing in our Vets Rugby team.
Have we?
Well, we've got Paul Arnold.
Is that only playing?
Yeah. Paul Arnold went on there.
Wants to play 12, allegedly.
Paul Arnold was the other lock in the England Counties tour to Argentina with London Scottish's Nick Rouse.
Is that right?
Yeah.
So, well Nick Rouse is at a loose end now. Does he fancy a Vets game? He's right age.
Nick Rouse and Arnie in the centres. Yeah. Arnie wants to play 12, doesn't he?
He does. So, we've got some big hitters. I don't think I can make it because I'm at Sale Sharks on Friday. I think you're at Sale Sharks on Friday as well, aren't you, Tim?
I'm not working at Sale Sharks on Friday. No.
Oh, you're not?
I don't think.
So wait, is there a game happening?
Yeah, yeah.
A Vets game?
Yeah, against Withenshaw.
Where?
In Withenshaw.
In Withenshaw?
Yeah.
Are you working at Sale?
I might do what I normally do, which is do the interviews, get in the car and get to the game. I feel it's a bit
rude. Do they both kick off at the same time?
Yes.
No. Anyway, we can work this out.
We'll sort that out.
We can work this out. Just so I reckon we look ahead to this week's domestic rugby on this podcast.
Perfect.
And look ahead to the Six Nations on the other podcast.
Okay, fine.
Let's do it.
So, come on then, Phil. Oh, by the way, is Sean Edwards now not going to Wigan, it seems, and going to Wasps?
Oh.
Interesting.
I never put two and two together. I keep forgetting he's got a job at Wigan.
Yeah, well, he had. He's clearly, unless he's going to be doing a lot of travelling between Coventry and Wigan, I don't think he's doing Wigan anymore.
Well, it's a poor show if he pulls out that Wigan job, because he knew what he was getting into and he knew that it'd be offers on the table from Union, so I won't have much time if he decides to renegade on that.
Renegade.
Yeah, fine.
Anyway.
But yeah, it's not a good look.
Fixtures.
Yes.
So there's no Pro 14 next weekend.
What? Devastated. Next.
We do have a full Gallagher Premiership, though. Okay. So, Friday night, two games. We've got Sale hosting Leicester Tigers. And Leicester. Snuck the win. Leicester did not play particularly well.
No, they didn't.
Contributed to the sheer number of injuries they had in the back line. But they didn't play particularly well. So, give me Sale.
Sale win this.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Sounds like you.
No, I don't know. I thought they were going to beat Exeter and they didn't. I don't think they're playing particularly well. I think they're a little bit off form. And if they're going to get jumped by Leicester, it'll be on Friday.
They don't have a fly off, do they?
Sale. They might have by next week.
Have they not been tempted to put one of the young lads through, like Redpath?
Wilkinson would be the one that they'd jump up. I don't think he's good enough yet, is the answer.
So I'm still going to go Sale at home against Leicester anyway.
Yep. And the other game is at the Rec, Bath hosting Saracens.
It's just what Bath need.
Yeah. I think this is going to be a Saracens win. Probably not. It's not going to be a big Saracens win, but a Saracens win nonetheless.
Be very Bathy to just sneak a win in this one.
Yeah.
Saracens just.
And then on Saturday, three games, 2 o'clock, Wasps host Newcastle, which I think Wasps will bounce back in this one.
Newcastle were fired up.
They had to be. And they still have to be in this game.
I think they'll be very, very focused on their home games.
Yeah.
Because they're playing Sale at home, Bristol at home, last game of the season. I think they've got Quins at home. And Northampton at home, I think, are their four home games.
Yeah. They beat Northampton away this year.
Don't quote me on those fixtures, but I'm just thinking off top. But yeah, anyway.
I think Wasps can do it. I think they were unlucky. They'll right some of the wrongs from that game, from the Leicester game.
Yeah, just.
JB, any thoughts on Wasps Newcastle?
Not really.
Northampton hosts Bristol at 2:45.
Northampton hosts Bristol.
Northampton at home.
Now this will be exciting if both teams play the way that they want to play. This could be a
40-50 or something.
Yeah, this could be a 100-point thriller.
Get all your Saints and Bristol players in fancy rugby draft this weekend.
Yeah, I think that's going to be a very good game.
Get your Bristol front row in your fancy rugby
Bristol,
draft.
Bristol second best scrim in the league.
Really?
That's amazing, isn't it?
Don't rub it in. I put a video up saying I predict Bristol will finish ninth and their front row is dynamite.
Okay.
I then selected the Bristol front row in the fantasy rugby draft.
So it's cheap then, isn't it?
I then dropped them.
Oh.
And then Phil picked them up and has reaped the rewards ever since. I've been kicking myself.
When Harry
and I picked up Nick Tompkins, dropped him, and he got 50 points this weekend.
Yeah, 46
points or something
Phil,
like that.
Phil has just been lurking, and whoever I've dropped, he's gone, I'm going to pick him up because...
Yeah, I've done
you had Ollie Thorley last year.
I had Ollie Thorley last year.
Cast him aside, ignored him this year.
Oh.
Ice scooping.
I just need to go back to gut feeling. I think too much. When I just go off the cuff, I know what I'm talking about.
Right.
The other fixtures...
Can I just explain what's going on? JB is so bored now. He's so excited to talk about the World League in the other podcast that we're doing.
Well, no, I'm reading an advert. I'm getting a script up for later.
Okay.
Come.
3 o'clock on Saturday, we've got Worcester hosting Exeter, which if Worcester get anything out of that game, they'll be very lucky.
Yeah.
I think they've got to aim for getting one losing bonus point, but I think they'll struggle. And Sunday will be interesting. So, unfortunately, there's... Oh, actually, so Sunday's very good. So, Sunday at 3 o'clock is the Ireland-France game, but Sunday at 1 o'clock is Harlequins-Gloucester.
Nice. Mm.
That will be an interesting game. So, it's third and fourth.
Both. That's a cracker of a game.
Both competing with each other to see who's going to travel to Saracens and who's going to travel to Exeter.
Yeah.
I haven't seen much of Quins, actually, this season.
What I've seen has been very good.
Yeah, it has
recently.
Been very good, yeah.
Marchant's playing really well. Yeah. But, almost whoever they put on the wing seems to play well. Ibatoya, Caden Murley, Earls is playing well. Mike Brown's
Ross
played on the
wing. Chisholm's been playing well.
Yeah.
What about, what's his name? Tim Visser? Any sign of him?
No, no sign of him or Charlie Walker.
Yeah, amazing. I was going to say Charlie Matthews, but he won't be playing Walker? On the wing.
Hmm? Wonder why Charlie Walker's sort of favour.
Yeah.
I'd love to know these things.
So, that will be an interesting game. Give me Quins.
I would. I said this about the Bath Quins game last week, though. I said whoever's at home will end up sneaking it. But Quins won it.
It is a very hard one to predict that.
I'll say Quins just at home.
It's that Gloucester, that nuggety South African Gloucester pack.
It's interesting, Paul Gustard as well, just like, will change a lot of guys. Marcus Smith, just like, he just swaps Lang and Smith over game by game.
I like James Lang, obviously because he came from RGC. But I do like him. I think he's a quality operator and he's very, very fast.
No, I'm going to say Gloucester are going to sneak it.
I'm going to say Gloucester as well.
There you go. Do not put any money on any of those predictions because they'll all be wrong.
Too right. Right, we're going to record another podcast which will be up right now as you're listening to this. So get it both listening to. That one's going to be all about International Rugby Six Nations and the World League that's caused the rugby world to spin off its axis this last week. Find him at JBeardmore, find me at Cocker, find Phil lurking somewhere on Twitter.
Your DMs.
Ready to slide into your DMs. Find us at Rugby Podcast and let the boys play.
Let the boys play.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.